Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Homage to the blessed, noble, and perfectly enlightened one. Namo sadantor sucedoye olahudi sanmyo sanputoshi. Like to pay my respects to Venerable Dharma Brothers in the Sangha, in the Upadhyaya, Rajan Pasano, and also to family, Carl and Jean, long-standing friends and other family, and all of the guests who are here gathered. And say congratulations to Bhikkhu Kachana. Well done, well done, well done. I would like to offer just a few reflections and keep it brief because this is certainly your moment, and maybe I can just add some frosting to the cake. But it's a tasty cake that you've baked indeed, and I think there's lots of nutrition for living beings to come. Having done what you did today in this form, you are now prepared to do what in the Chinese tradition is called xian shen shuo fa, literally manifest in person to speak the Dharma. And a good English translation would be to just embody the teachings. And here on the mountain, this is a bhikkhu culture. This is the Buddha's turf, and the rules are clear, and there's very much a sense of order and tradition and something very deep. But I do trust that you will regularly go down from the mountain to the world below, which is traditionally talked about as the red dust in the Chinese tradition, Hongchen, the world of Maya, the world of illusion and delusion. And it's a world that you're very familiar with because you are successful in the world and manifesting the best qualities of your parents and your generations of ancestors. So now you're going back, but in a very different external costume. Never mind that Halloween is coming, but when you show up, people will ask you to say, "Cool costume, man." I get that all the time. So not only on Halloween, but November 1st, you're also in that cool costume. So how are you going to embody the teachings? Xian shen shuo fa, manifest a body to speak the Dharma. And I thought the best way to exhort and to encourage you to be to share some of my own personal stories. And one of them was on a bowing pilgrimage that I did in my early formation as a monk. I was outdoors. I was off the mountain. And this experience happened in Beverly Hills on Wilshire Boulevard in downtown LA. And it was a Sunday morning like today, just as quiet, early. And myself and my monk companion had just finished our exercise. We'd done some tai chi on the maintenance shed of a golf course, the Beverly Hills Country Club, as a matter of fact. And so we had gotten back into our vehicle where we did our ceremonies and meditated. And right at that point, a police cruiser pulled up behind us, and it was the whole scene with the red light and the going on. And a voice said, "All right, get out of the car, put your hands on the hood." And so we're going, "Oh my goodness." All right, so slowly we get out of the car, and he says, "Oh, Johnson. Oh, it's the Buddhist. Oh, never mind, guys. You can relax. We've been watching you. You're okay," he said. And so it was early enough that the two patrolmen, they were LAPD, they took the opportunity. They said, "You know, we've been really wanting to ask you guys, what are you doing this for? You know, we know what you do. We know that you're vegetarian. We know that one of you is not even talking, and you don't take money, and we can see you're fit. You know the arts," meaning the martial arts. He said, but we just can't figure out what in the world would motivate you to do what you're doing, this bowing thing that you're doing. And the monk who spoke, someone who you know well, Dr. Martin Verhoeven said, formerly he was called Hung Chao, he said, well, in a way, we're doing exactly what you're doing as police. What do you mean by that? He said, well, we're doing exactly what you're doing, but from the other side. And he said, I don't get it. And what do you mean? He said, well, you know, we have a much easier job doing what you do than what you're actually doing. He said, well, let me explain. It's the rules that we live by. He said, as monks, we don't kill, steal, conduct ourselves sexually. We don't tell lies, and we don't use any intoxicants. And that's kind of basic, not just the monks, but also lay people who take the precepts. These are the rules we live by. This is what we do. And the cop says, give me that list again. What was that again? He said, kill, steal, lust, lies, and drugs. He says, yeah, I get it. He said, you know, you are doing the same thing we do. If everybody did what you do, we wouldn't have a job. It's precisely because people kill, steal, lust, lie, and drug themselves that we have a job. But what do you mean from the opposite? He said. And so Marty said, well, he said, actually, he said, all those things are rooted in the mind. And we try to stop them before they manifest in the body. So what you guys do is kind of like trying to put a Band-Aid on a cancer. It's already too late. You get the results of missing those thoughts when they occur in the mind. If you can catch them in the mind, it's easy. If you wait till they manifest, then you've got a hard job to do. So the policeman goes, yeah, I see. I get it. He says, all right, fellas, good luck. We'll be watching for you down the road. He said, so you're now going out to Xianzhen Shofa to appear in this form, in your robes, in your three robes that you now can name in Pali and in English, and that you're going to slowly wash until they lose that new shine that they've got now, and until they get comfortable, and you're going to be much better at holding that role tight as the years go by, you know. So you'll be speaking in person, speaking the Dharma with your body, in a way. And the second story I wanted to tell was when I visited my brother in 1992, I have an older brother, Stephen, who's 3 years older than I am. And he and I have always related well, but there was a long period in my formation as a monk when we didn't see each other. And one of the reasons was not only because I was in various monasteries, but it was because he was a career soldier and worked in the Pentagon. He had a top secret clearance, and I wasn't allowed to speak to him because it was just simply easier for him not to have truck with Buddhist monks than to have to go through all the screening and things. So at a certain point, when he was working in the Pentagon in intelligence, his ceiling in his office was Colin Powell's floor. General Colin Powell had the office over my brother. And I was in our monastery in Maryland, and took the opportunity to go visit my brother. Things had changed for him, and he could now invite me in. So I said, well, where would we meet? I said, would you like to come out to the monastery? He says, no, why don't you come over to the Pentagon? We can talk here. So I said, you kidding? I said, you sure I won't be shot? He says, oh, come on. He says, I think you'll be surprised. He says, I've been watching, reading what you write, and I've been looking into Buddhism a little bit, and I think you'll be fine. He said, come on in, and I'll give you the clearance, and you tell him my name, and you can come down, and we'll talk here. So I said, sure, why not? This is a very American experience, I think, that Buddha Dharma walks to the Pentagon. So So I did, found a parking lot, and walked in, and gave his name at the door, and I was surprised because the the army, he was a Marine, as he saw me, saluted me and checked my credentials and very politely opened the door and let me in, told me where to go. And as I walked down the hall, I received more salutes. And I was really surprised. Not only was I not looked at as some strange being that had, you know, dropped out of the heavens or popped up from the earth, but there was some sort of strange recognition of the discipline, of the training. And I showed up, and my brother met me outside his office door, and then he had to go through the retina scans and all the punching of the buttons and the various secret handshakes, you know, to get the door open into his office. And I went in, I sat down and talked to him. I said, I was amazed that there was somehow people seemed very hospitable to a monk walking down the hall in robes, looking exactly as I looked, as Venerable Ajahn Chah. Yeah, you wear your robes when you go out. And I said, why would that be? He said, well, I think it's, you know, whatever you're doing seems to shine. Whatever you're doing seems to shine through, and people recognize a kind of similarity of purpose, I think. And he said, that's the way I feel when I look at you. And from my brother, this was unaccustomed affection from my brother, to be able to, for him to speak as much from his heart as that. And so he said, yeah, he said, I think they notice. I mean, I know what you do. You work hard. He says, your training is almost military. He's kind of like the Buddhist soldiers, maybe, something like that. I said, well, I'm not used to that concept, but I'll go for it, you know, the Buddhist soldiers. And so then the door to his to the joint reception room opened up in his office, and out came my brother's boss. And my brother's boss was an Air Force general. I didn't know there were generals in the Air Force. I thought they might be, what, you know, colonels or something. But there was an Air Force general who was a fighter pilot, a PhD from Harvard, who, after he got his doctorate, decided he wanted to serve his country. And so he was in the Air Force, the flying wing of the Army. The Army also flies planes. So he's an Air Force general. He's an Army general who's a fighter pilot. And he came out, and he said, whoa, Clowry, he says, who's this? And he said, well, this is my brother who I mentioned was going to come visit. He said, oh, you don't say. Let's see, you're a bhikshu. Is that correct? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, well, I don't know about bhikshus. I know about bhikkhus because I've been in Thailand. He said, come on into my office. Let's talk dharma. So I went in and closed the door. My brother's eyes were really wide, you know. So this man had been in Thailand in the army and knew quite a bit about Buddhism and asked me some fine points about shunyata. He says, I've been studying up Asian religions quite a bit now, and I thought I might get it from the source, so tell me about, you know. I had this involved Dharma conversation with my brother's boss for an hour. It came out, and my brother was, you know, he was back to work, and he says, I've worked for the man for 2 years and never gotten more than 15 minutes. You walk in my office, and he talks to you for an hour. He says, this is something. So, you never know. Once you put on these robes, they open doors, as well as give people pause. And I think there's no question that you're going to be asked over and over and over again, why did you do it? Today, driving up to attend your ordination, I was in the Shell station at South Cloverdale Boulevard there in Cloverdale. And a man and wife got out of their Highlander SUV. They're Highlander, what's it called? Hybrid. Now Toyota has put the hybrid into big vehicles, so it's an SUV hybrid. And she was paying for her gas, and she looked at me and asked the standard questions. Could I ask about your outfit? She didn't want to say costume, but it was, you know, your outfit. Very polite. No, she was genuinely curious. And why did you do it? And I responded, told in 2 seconds why I had done it. And she tried to come up with the name of the Dalai Lama, but couldn't. You know, she said, oh, there's a Buddhist that I read about. Well, never mind. She said, that's very interesting. She said, and very polite. So I'm suggesting that you might get your stories, get, you know, work on it. What are your why did you do it? You know, and I'm sure every one of the bhikkhus on the platform has the same experience and has different stories to tell. You can tell the 30-second version or the Dharma talk version, you know, but you say it over and over again because people are genuinely interested what the significance of this form has for their lives. Because you have let go of a lot. And I'm sure your folks are, you know, when they knew that, I mean, I know about your folks' encouragement of your spiritual journey, but still there's a question, you know, of all the work getting you to that doctorate, and what pride they could say, well, Witt is actually in the doctoral program in Berkeley, you know, and that cuts ice. I mean, that really makes a difference to folks. And they say, Witt is actually now a novice Shramanera in a monastery in a mountainside in Mendocino County. And people go, did I hear that correctly? Well, congrats, I'm so sorry. That's wonderful. People don't know what to say. But I believe that it will become easier. My mom, this is the last story, and then it's time to stop. When I first decided to xian shen zhuo fa, to put on that form, to take on a form, and to live by the rules of a bhikkhu, a bhikshu, my mother cried. Oh my goodness. She was brokenhearted because this betrays my age, but I was supposed to become Walter Cronkite. She would have been happy if I was Walter Cronkite, or had I been a U.S. senator, wouldn't have been quite as good as Walter Cronkite, because senators can be corrupt, but Walter Cronkite was absolutely to be trusted. And that would have been sufficient for her. But certainly I was not supposed to become a bhikshu. She and big shoes. She didn't know what to do with the word. It was Sanskrit. And she was very brokenhearted. And then to discover that I had taken a vow of silence and I was bowing to the highway under truck wheels, that made no sense whatsoever. So she went through a very difficult period. Poor mom. And her friends all said, oh, poor Debbie. Christopher was supposed to become so much more. There was no concept of at least in Ireland, if one son becomes a priest, you're in good shape. You know, one son of the family is a priest. But when the Irish moved to America, there's no particular value in becoming a priest. So become a Buddhist monk was even less valued. But times change. And my mom now says, you know, when I hear your voice on the phone, it sounds so energetic. And you know, it's so good to know that I'm never going to pick up the phone with you and know that you've got AIDS. I'm never going to hear that you're bankrupt. I'm never going to hear that you decided to divorce. She said, and I don't expect that you're ever going to have a nervous breakdown. She says, none of my friends can say the same about their children. She says, so I think having a monk in the family's a pretty good thing, she said. She says, and now those same friends who used to come and say, poor Debbie, instead they say, Debbie, I've got a situation. Would you mind asking Hung Shur what he thinks? Could you just run it by him and see what he says? Because having a bhikshu in the family is now a good thing to have. So just to give these brief comments to exhort and encourage. And as you xian shen shuo fa, as you appear in this form to speak the Dharma, as you embody the Dharma and the teachings, may you gather all those stories of each encounter, because they are priceless. This is the beginning of the Dharma in the West. We've just got a toehold here, but it's the real thing. And every encounter, I think, is a seed for speaking Dharma. So may you be a source of blessings for all living beings. May the devas and humans gain great benefit from what you've done today. Well done, indeed.
Sadhu, sadhu. Uh,